Who doesn't like a good story? I mean, we see this most clearly with children, don't we? When they just, there's a certain book that they just love and they say, read it again, read it again. And hopefully as a parent or a guardian, you like it or else you might eventually lose it. Oh, sorry, don't know where it is. I think the reason we like stories so much is that they spark the imagination for what could be. James Brian Smith wrote a book called The Good and Beautiful God. And in it, he makes the case that the stories that we believe about God are ultimately important because they shape how we live and how we have relationship with God. In fact, he would suggest that a lot of our stories about God and how life works got warped over time. And the problem with that is it affects our lives, living out our stories. So he invites us to see and hear the stories that Christ tells of God so that we can reorient ourselves to the correct stories. Now, I understand you've been in this series about parables. And, of course, that's one of the ways Jesus tells us the right story about God. Perhaps Pastor Bruce has already talked about this, but I want to talk a little bit about what is a parable and what is going on in a parable, the story that Jesus tells about God. Well, that word, parable, comes from two Greek words, bole and para, which actually means to throw alongside. Bole, I think of bowling, that's how I remember it, is like throwing, and para is alongside. So what a parable does is it takes everyday events and objects, what's familiar, and it throws it alongside the mysteries of the kingdom, that which is unfamiliar. It's a metaphoric story. Kenneth Bailey is a theologian who spent a lot of time in the Middle Eastern culture, and he suggests that a parable is kind of like a house, and we're invited to live in it and to enter it. I think we can really understand that these days, right? With the pandemic, we aren't entering into people's houses quite as easily and readily, and it feels a little strange. Well, that's how we need to see parables, that we need to step into them and look through the windows of the parable to better understand our lives. Parables are life-size stories that we're meant to step into. And these aren't just any stories. These are stories about the kingdom of God. Now, that word kingdom is something that we don't talk a lot about. We usually say nation or tribe or nationality. But in the ancient Middle Eastern reality, it was a huge concept. The idea was a kingdom, of course, involved people and it involved land. But more importantly, it suggested a state of affairs. In fact, whoever the king was really affected the state of affairs of the kingdom and their people. So who the king is critical because it's his character that would determine the type of kingdom and rule under which the people would find themselves. So it's no surprise that parables are about God's kingdom and in particular his character, so we know what kind of state of affairs we can expect living under God's rule. So why did Jesus teach in parables? Well, parables are so fun because they both clear up and they mystify, right? They both obscure and reveal. Parables are meant to make the reader think. They're like a good story that captures our imaginations and engage us. I think of parables are like that joke you don't first get. You know that awkward feeling when somebody tells a joke and you kind of do the courtesy laugh, and then a little while later you go, oh, I get it, that was hilarious. Well, that's how you got to understand a parable. As we interpret the parable, it actually is interpreting us. So how do Jesus' parables work? Well, before we get to today's parable, I want you to think about three elements to Jesus' parable. Typically, there are ordinary elements. He uses ordinary images and events that were rooted in the everyday life. And the original hearers could have totally imagined what Jesus was talking about. So the ordinary elements of the parable. But then there were also odd elements where there was a surprise or a twist, where the story deviated from what the people would have expected. Now, the original hearers would have heard it right away because they would have seen what was different. We often need a little help because of the historical and cultural context gap. So ordinary, odd, and finally, there's the outrage. There's a scandal embedded in the parable, a scandal to our sensibilities. When the plot finally settles in, it can actually bring offense to the hearers. It calls into question the common understanding of God. And more often than not, maybe you've been learning this with Pastor Bruce, it often pushes the understanding of God as being that extravagant and that generous. How can that be? Jesus pushes us to wrestle with the outrage of the parable to understand the God that Jesus reveals. And so with that, I invite you to turn with me to Matthew 20, verses 1 through 15. Matthew 20, verses 1 through 15. For the kingdom of heaven is like a landowner who went out early in the morning to hire workers for his vineyard. He agreed to pay them a denarius for the day and sent them into his vineyard. About 9 in the morning, he went out and he saw others standing in the marketplace doing nothing. He told them, "You also go and work in my vineyard, and I will pay you whatever is right." So they went out. He went again about noon and about 3 in the afternoon and did the same thing. About 5 in the afternoon, he went out and found still others standing around. He asked them, "Why have you been standing here all day doing nothing?" "Because no one has hired us," they answered. He said to them, "You also go and work in my vineyard." When evening came, the owner of the vineyard said to his foreman, "Call the workers and pay them their wages, beginning with the last ones hired and going on to the first." The workers, who were hired about 5 in the afternoon, came and each received a denarius. So when those who came who were hired first, they expected to receive more. But each one of them also received a denarius. When they received it, they began to grumble against the landowner. "These who were hired last worked only 1 hour," they said, "and you have made them equal to us who have borne the burden of the work and the heat of the day." But he answered one of them, "I'm not being unfair to you, friend. Didn't you agree to work for a denarius? Take your pay and go. I want to give the one who was hired last the same as I gave you. Don't I have the right to do what I want with my own money? Or are you envious because I am generous?" The word of the Lord. So let's look at today's text and remember those three elements: the ordinary, the odd, and the outrage. So how would the original audience who heard this story understood it? What were the ordinary aspects that they would have caught right away? Well, the vineyards and the landowners, they would have totally pictured that because it was a vital crop to the area of the time. And typically, the landowners were the gentlemen of society, kind of the upper crust. So that's how they would have pictured the landowner. They would also seen it as very ordinary, of the story about the daily workers. You see, in that time, unemployment was a huge issue. The men would gather in the corner of the market or city square in the early morning, and they would wait for the foremans from the fields to come to pick them for the day's work. And you can well imagine that it was typically the strongest, the healthiest, and the fastest who would be picked for that day. And these workers relied on this daily employment to survive. They didn't get a contract like workers do today. The wage would have also been ordinary. 1 denarius was typical for a day's work. And a day's work typically went from 6 a.m. in the morning to 6 p.m. at night. It was just enough to provide daily for the family, and it was paid at the end of the workday, so they would have enough money for the next day for the food that they needed for their families. So that's what would have been ordinary. That's the original hearers would have been like, "Oh yeah, we totally track with you, Jesus. We can picture this." So what would have been odd to them? What would have been the twist or surprise? What kind of deviated from normal? The first thing that would have caught their attention was that it was the landowner who went to the marketplace, to the city square. You see, it was the foreman's duty to do that, but he doesn't come into the story till later. The landowner, right, the upper crust of society, is the one who's going to the city square with all these, you know, scrappy employed, you know, workers. What's going on? They also would have found it very strange that the landowner didn't go once in the morning, but he goes multiple times to employ men. I mean, this was an experienced landowner. He would have known the manpower he needed for the crops that needed to be pulled off for that day. But we're told by Jesus that this landowner goes back to the marketplace every 3 hours. Why? And remember that the quality of the pickings would have gotten worse each time because the best and the brightest would have been picked first. And then he goes back one last time when there was only 1 hour of work remaining. I mean, truly, the original audience would have been like, what could those guys have done? So that would have been very odd. And then the wage. This fact that the landowner told the foreman to pay the last ones first and the first ones last, that just didn't happen. And then he pays exactly the same amount, a living wage, to all. So the first workers are angry, and even that's a little off because these workers need this guy to hire him again tomorrow. So the fact that they get angry, so angry, seems odd. And think about it. If the owner had paid the first workers, the 6 a.m. workers first, they would have been none the wiser that he had paid the same rate to the rest of the group. So why did the landowner switch it around intentionally? That's odd. So what's the outrage? What is the scandal of this parable? The scandal and outrage is the landowner himself, his character, and his behavior. First of all, he is compassionate. He returns again and again to the marketplace, hoping that all the people have been hired. By going out himself, he signifies solidarity with the unemployed. He realizes the need for dignified work and a living wage. And he recognizes that as men are being picked over and as the day goes along, there's an increasing humiliation that they didn't get to work. So he redeems their humanity, even the last group who only has 1 hour to work. Wow, what compassion. And then the landowner is generous. He begins by paying the last workers first, actually giving them honor in front of all the other workers. And he's stirring the pot because he knows what will happen. But he pays all a living wage. He pays all exactly the same amount. I love how Kenneth Bailey paraphrases the conversation between the master and the 6 a.m. workers. Listen to this. So the master's saying to those early workers, I've given what I agreed to pay you. I chose to pay these men a living wage. You will be able to go home to your wives and children and proudly announce that you found work and have a full day's pay. I want these other men to be able to walk in the doors of their houses with the same joy in their hearts and the same money in their pockets. I want their children and wives to be as proud of them as yours are of you. Wow. The character of the landowner. But the outrage is also the character and behavior of the first workers. They have a jealous anger. They go so far as to chide the landowner. Because what happened was, when they saw the last guys getting a denarius, they start to calculate in their own heads that they're going to get more. And again, Kenneth Bailey says this, this is not the cry of the underpaid. No one is underpaid in this parable. The complaint is from the justly paid who cannot tolerate grace. This morning, we are called to live into the compassionate generosity of our God. That's who Jesus is telling us about. And the first invitation is for ourselves to radically reshape our stories and how we show up in the world. I want to ask you this morning, who are you in this parable? Do you identify maybe with those who were chosen first, the brightest, the best? Maybe you're one of the people like me, a hardworking Christian from birth on, right? Grew up in the church, grew up in a good family. Then this parable is saying, beware. Beware because all that we have is gift. All that we are is grace. We need to shape our story that this it is glorious to be able to work for the Father for as long as we have. But perhaps this morning you identify with one of the later groups. Maybe you're thinking, yeah, who am I? Like, I'm even surprised Jesus picked me. Like, what am I doing here? And this morning the parable is saying, who are you not? You are the beloved. God sees your humanity. He sees his image in you. And that is his call for you today, to step in and know that you are beloved. It's for all of us to lean into and to live out of God's compassionate generosity, refusing to live from a theology of scarcity. And this is going to be even more important in these hard economic times we're facing. Let us not live out of a theology of scarcity, but of one of generosity. We have a landowner who goes out to us in solidarity, and we know this to be true because Jesus is the Word embodied. Jesus is God made flesh, who came among us and put his tent in our neighborhood, who came to redeem and restore us, to show solidarity with us, to regain our human dignity. And Jesus' parable is his description and explanation of his ministry, his life, his death, his resurrection. And friends, that is God's heartbeat. His heartbeat is love for us and his creation. Julian of Norwich says this, "The greatest honor we can give to God is to live gladly because of the knowledge of his love." Or the Westminster Shorter Catechism, question and answer 1, says this, "What is the chief end of a person? To glorify God and to enjoy him forever." I think us Christian Reformed Church do the really good thing of, yes, we need to glorify God. But what about that part? And to enjoy him forever, because he is a compassionate, generous God. So we're called to live into this for ourselves. But we're also called to be conduits of that compassionate generosity for others. We're called to call out of others their human dignity and that they are image bearers of God. And friends, we need to do this, especially for those who are un and underemployed, to have a growing empathy and understanding for others, especially those of us in middle class. It's easy for us to judge those who are in different socioeconomic levels. But we need to be compassionate and generous. I think an organization who does this so well is Indwell out of Hamilton. You know them, the Affordable Supportive Housing Organization. They emphasize the inherent dignity of each person. And as a result, everyone deserves a house. Everyone deserves a roof over their heads. And the great thing with Indwell is they don't expect you to have it all together before you live in one of their facilities. They figure it's when you come into the facility, then you can battle your demons, your mental health issues, your addictions, because you know you are loved and you have a safe place to be. Friends, I feel like I'm living out of this parable. Moving into this ministry, the South Coast Beach Project, I left my previous job at Good News Church, and I'm basically building a bridge that I'm walking over, a position and a ministry. And so I've had to totally rely on the generosity of God through others. And I'm so thankful for the generosity of Emmanuel Christian Reformed Church to call me as the missional pastor of the South Coast Beach Project. I'm so thankful for the generosity of Resonate to allow me to be a missionary partner and the supports they give me. And I am totally reliant on the generosity of those who donate to help raise the funds to make this ministry happen. And if I had more time, I would love to tell you some of the amazing stories of how people have shown up and just shown me what a generous God we have through their kindness and their support and their generosity. That's what we're called to be and to do. So there's this power of story, of having the accurate story, Because, friends, the story that we tell ourselves about God shapes how we live and how we are with others. And so it's imperative that we get this story correct. It affects the shape of our individual as well as our collective stories. Often this parable is called the parable of the workers in the vineyard. Kenneth Bailey argues that it should be called the parable of the compassionate employer. I think it should be the parable of the generous landowner. According to Jesus, catch this, we have a compassionate, generous God who seeks out those in the city square, redeeming and restoring their humanity, reshaping them, reshaping us by his confounding generosity. And all God's people say, Amen.